You're listening to Unceded Airwaves by the Indigenous Collective at CITR 101.9 FM.
We haven't even been dangerous, but we on the rise. You haven't even seen nothing yet. Turn it up where you're up.
We ain't not dangerous, us, but we can be dangerous. We ain't not dangerous, us, but we can be dangerous. We are so indigenous, us. Fully beat is glorious, us. Grand entry is glorious, us. Drumming is victorious, us. No one can stop us, nah.
Unceded Airwaves is broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. You heard JB the First Lady with Dangerous for our show intro today. Before that, you heard Kinney Starr, who was playing a song before that. This is Unceded Airwaves. We're broadcasting every week from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. My name is Lisa Gerbov, and I am Simshan from the Simshan Nation. My mother's from Lough Quilams, and I grew up in my territory in the city of Prince Rupert. And I acknowledge that while I'm here studying at UBC and working and living, I am an uninvited guest on the traditional territory of the Musqueam people while I'm studying here on the UBC campus. And we have a pretty busy day today. I'm joined in the studio now by a couple of Indigenous Collective members. Mario, maybe we'll start off with you.
Yeah, hi, my name is Mario. I identify as Niska for my mother. I am a third-year major in the First Nations Indigenous Studies program. I'm also joined by Chris.
Don't say everybody. My name is Chris, as Mario alluded to. Anyways, I'm in my final year of the FNIS program. I'm Nahio. I come from Alberta. More specifically, Saddle Lake, which is just northeast of Edmonton.
Excellent. Thank you, too, for joining us today. And we want to thank you, our listeners, for tuning into Season 2, Episode 15.
Woo, woo.
I can't believe we've made it to 15 episodes. Well, I knew we were going to make it to 15 episodes, but it seems like it's just flying by.
Yeah.
Yeah, this week we are discussing Hobie, the Nishka New Year.
That's right. I did a segment with Kian Tate, talking a little bit more to the history of Hobie as it pertains to the Nass Valley and how it migrated to Vancouver and is now celebrated abroad by many Indigenous communities here in Vancouver.
The urban Nishka Simshan Indigenous
right.
community here in Vancouver.
Yeah, and so just as a forward sell for the event itself, Hobie is taking place this February. February 3rd, which is the Friday, and Saturday, February 4th, from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. on both days.
12 hours of dancing.
That's
and
right.
music.
You'll have the chance to see up to 600 dancers at a time.
I heard about that.
It has almost like 5,000 people, so it's a really big event. If you haven't had a chance to see it yet, I'd strongly recommend it. And that's happening at 2901 East Hastings, which is the P&E Forum.
So you can go there, see all your cousins, make
That's
some
right.
friends.
Make some new cousins.
Make some new cousins, yes.
Whatever.
It's going to be so fun. I'm going to be performing in it with my dance group, and I spent basically the entire weekend making regalia. It was awesome. So.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it as well. We've been preparing for a while now, and it's a great chance just to go and celebrate.
And I'm really excited that we get to talk about it today on the show as well.
That's right. Yeah,
it's just like really exciting.
In our previous episode, I talked about the Lunar New Year's with my friend Matt. So he talked about Chinese New Year. I talked about my experience leading up to Hobie, which is the Nisga New Year, both following, astrology with the moon. So.
Yeah, that's amazing. And coming up after that, we have a segment that was brought to us from Josh Kiyoki, who is an Indigenous Collective member coming to us from the Attawapiskat First Nation. And he had an interview with James Hart a few weeks ago, who is the master carver and hereditary chief from Haida Gwaii, who's carving the Pole of Reconciliation behind Moa. And this segment is a supplementary interview, and I love this segment because it talks all about choosing the right tree for carving a totem pole, which is a step that you might not necessarily think about when you're looking at the artwork of a totem pole, all the work that goes into it before the pole actually goes up. And so
that's right. I mean, I've had just a little bit of experience with carving, and to know exactly what kind of wood you need is such a huge deal. Like, it just goes in any direction if you don't have the right one. So if you take the time and really find the right piece that's going to do that, what you need it to, then the job will get done much easier.
Yeah, I'm excited for this one. So yeah, that interview is coming up just after we talk about the Nishka New Year. To start off the show, though, we always start off with our intention. And so who are we, Chris?
We are the Indigenous Radio Collective. What we do is we put together the show every week to discuss Indigenous issues, current events, and entertainment. We are also a collective of Indigenous and non-Indigenous students, and we use this weekly airtime for our own self-representation.
Our goal in this show is to center the voices of Indigenous peoples and to create narratives that empower our stories of self-representation in the media is something that Indigenous peoples do not often have access to.
And so this show gives us the opportunity to define who we are as Indigenous people instead of relying on inaccurate or stereotypical representations of First Nations, Métis, and Inuit people in broadcast media. And we are all very diverse. Indigenous cultures are very diverse and nuanced, and we're here to really show who we are as Indigenous people.
Yeah, that's right. For us, it can be difficult to find relatable Indigenous role models and people in media. So this is our opportunity to highlight some influential Indigenous people. Like I said, I'll be talking to Kian Tate, who I look up to as a cultural leader in our community. So getting a chance to really speak with him and to listen to the wealth of knowledge that he shares is really great.
So if you're listening to this and you're pondering ways to relate to the goals of the show, or if you're wondering how you can become involved, please reach out. You can always reach us on our social media, and if something in this show strikes out, strikes a chord with you, then we want to hear from you.
And of course, everyone is welcome, Indigenous and non-Indigenous people, and there is no experience necessary either. We're all coming to the show. We're learning about broadcast media. We're learning something about each other. We're learning about ourselves. And so it's just a really fun environment to just be in. But the first step is just getting here. Once you get here, you'll see that we're really cool and we're really nice people, and I'm pretty sure you'll want to hang out with us a lot more. So what you can do is you can reach out to us every Wednesday at 4 p.m. We have our weekly meeting at CITR in the lower level of the Nest here at UBC. And if you want to get involved, but maybe you don't want to be on air, there are plenty of other ways that you can participate in this collective. And this week we are playing all Indigenous music thanks to one of our new Indigenous collective members, Natalie Kapp, who isn't on today, but hopefully we'll have her on a little bit later on, maybe next week or the week after. But thank you so much for choosing the music for us today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, and you can follow Unceded Airwaves on Facebook and Twitter. If you have an Indigenous artist that we should know about, send us a tweet using the hashtag Unceded Music, or send us a Facebook message at Unceded Airwaves, and we'll do our best to get it on air. And if we play a song that you send us, we'll give you a specific shout out. So shout out to Natalie for doing our list for us today.
Thank you so much. And we're always looking to hear from our listeners about what you're up to. So let us know about any Indigenous artists that you're into right now and what events you're attending or promoting, which is really important. I really love promoting our Unceded events.
Yeah, that's right.
Is there something? Well, I mean, for us, like, we're talking about Hobie this week. And we're also talking about all sorts of different things happening in the community. So I think, like, the whole Unceded events listing is just a great way to connect Indigenous people doing cool things with other Indigenous people.
Yeah, and happening right now, actually, the Chilcotin First Nation, First Nation chiefs and allies are rallying on the steps of Vancouver Federal Court to fight the Taseko Mines bid to revive a mine that has since been rejected, or that has been rejected twice. This is a fight 30 years going and aims to protect sacred lands and waters from this massive low-grade copper gold mine. Chief Roger William and Unicitan Chief Russell Myers Ross, both chiefs from the Chilcotin National Government and Union of BC Indian Chiefs President Grand Chief Stuart Phillip have been down there since 8:30 a.m., speaking to the immense significance of this to the Chilcotin case, and also just talking to Indigenous and non-Indigenous people more broadly. The Chilcotin Nation is co-hosting fundraisers during this week's hearings to assist in the significant court costs it has been forced to incur. Tuesday, January 31st, 7 p.m. at the Wise Hall, 1882 Adirondack Street in Vancouver, as well Wednesday, February 1st at 7 p.m. at St. John the Divine Church, 1611 Quadra Street in Victoria. And in other news, Trump is still flying in circles because he's got two right wings.
Trump is taking it to the next level. His anti-immigration policy has been implemented as of Friday via an executive order to stop all movement of people from six countries who are Muslim-majority countries, including Iraq, Iran, Syria, Somalia, Sudan, Libya, and Yemen. And they're preventing people from entering America under any visa for at least 120 days, as well as putting a pause on any immigration into the United States. This rhetoric doesn't hold up, obviously, because First Nations people are the first people of this land, and Trump and his ancestors are all immigrants to this land as well. And so this is a topic that we want to acknowledge this week on the show, but we're going to maybe cover it more in depth, hopefully next week, when we can have a few more Indigenous Collective members come into the show. I know it's late in January and people are starting to get ready for midterms and papers and essays. So we're gonna acknowledge that this is happening. It's very important. You can find a lot of this information through Twitter. If you follow some influential people, they'll definitely have something to say about this. But we wanted to acknowledge it. We don't want to leave you, the listeners, hanging. And of course, did you have something to say, Mario?
You know, just something that's been sitting heavy on my heart in the last little while has been, it's been a year now since Human Rights Ruling Tribunal for Child Welfare, and Cindy Blackstock has been leading that fight for over a decade. One thing that she says is that she would like to see citizens pick up the phone and call their member of parliament and call the prime minister and say, you know, we want Canada's 150th birthday to end the racial discrimination. And what she's talking about there is there's a huge discrepancy in what kind of funds are going to First Nations children on reserve as opposed to the welfare that's given to any Canadian citizen in the rest of Canada. And so between those two, it's been described in a human rights tribunal as racial discrimination. So that's what's been kind of sitting in with me. And I just wanted to bring that up. Maybe we'll have a chance to talk about it further in a future episode. But because I work with youth that are in care, as well as children, that's a topic that's close to my heart right now. So just thinking about that.
That's amazing that you brought that up. I'm really glad that you brought that up this week. And it's great to hear that you are working with youth. That's a great initiative.
Yeah,
and
thank you.
I wanted to do some shout outs here. I just wanted to also acknowledge that we're going to have some youth coming to the station.
That's right.
This week, it's going to be exciting. We have the Four Directions Secondary School from Kamloops coming to visit us on Thursday, and we're going to be hosting a workshop with about 30 to 35 students here at the station.
Yeah, and part of one of our initiatives here is not only to be working to bring Indigenous media here in the present, but also thinking about ways in which we can help Indigenous youth in the future construct those ideas of critical media and engagement. So I really applaud the rest of the group in being able to help facilitate that. I won't be there specifically, but I'll be helping planning around that. So
yeah.
Looking forward to it.
And we really appreciate all the help that you've had with planning that initiative so far. I'm just so excited to hang out with youth. I'm like, this is going to be like the best day ever, making radio and yeah, having so much fun. So that's coming up this week. We'll try and get some photos up on Facebook later on this week as well of some of the activities that we're doing, and hopefully we'll get them on the station recording some promos for Unceded Airwaves. Another shout out for this week. We had an Unceded Mornings first. Josh Kiyoki and I co-hosted the morning show on Thursday.
Yeah, I caught that. It was great. I liked it. It was really fun and just like, you know, jumping in there, playing some music, talking about what you guys are doing in school right now, which is really cool. So I didn't actually realize everything that Josh was doing, so as well as yourself.
So. Yeah, and so with the morning show, we got asked to contribute to the 24 Hours of Student Power, which was an initiative that was organized by one of our Indigenous Collective members, Josh Gabert-Doyon, who has contributed a few different pieces with the Indigenous Collective so far this season, and we're really grateful for that. And when he offered for us to have some extra airtime, it turns out it was at 6 a.m., so I think Josh and I were a little bit, maybe I was a bit more delirious because I pretty much just laughed the entire episode. So yeah, it was a really fun
I know I wouldn't be able to wake up for 6 a.m., let alone like 5 a.m. to get here on time. Like, there's no way. I'm sorry.
It was really, really fun, actually. I don't mind doing mornings. You get it done, and then we're done by 7, and basically I just sat up in the nest and did homework for the morning. So.
That's cool, but I struggled to get here for even 10 o'clock to do show prep for 11, so that's the meme.
Yeah, we also wanted to give some shout-outs to some awesome Indigenous organizations who are asserting their Aboriginal rights, the Leelu Island Warriors, the Gitwal Gyats tribe from the Tsimshian Territory, as well as the Standing Rock Lakota Sioux tribe, who I think are going to be facing a few more hurdles here with the new turnover in presidency. The Matty Lee Camp in the Gitsan Territory and the Unistoten Camp of the Wet'suwet'en peoples. If you have anyone that we would that we should be giving shout outs to, maybe your own nation, you can always tweet us at Unceded Airwaves or send us a Facebook message. We have that clip from Mario, the interview talking about Hobie coming up just after we play a song. This is Santa Fe by Samantha Crane. And Samantha is a Choctaw artist from down south of us. And I love the song. I've been playing it on guitar recently, just practicing. And I forgot about the song. And then it came up for me recently. So, yeah, this song is one of my favorites.
Like someone famous died. I finally found our common ground. Eyes of rain was coming down. All your paintings black and mouths, they didn't make a sound. But we got found out. And I'm heading out of Santa Fe. I look back and I look away. Feels like I'm running away. Babe, I know you know. Just 'cause I'm back on the road, it don't mean you're fixed.
it's a hard night, and I can't find a way to make it right. So I'm heading back to Santa Fe. I look back, then look away, away that blue sky. Fades, feels like I'm running away. Babe, I know you see just how hard it is for me to unpack my clothes and shoes and stay right here with you. I don't know how to.
You just heard Samantha Crane with the song Santa Fe from the album You Understood. Samantha Crane is coming to us from the Choctaw Nation.
Excellent. And now we have a clip coming up talking about Hobie 2017. Mario, did you have anything you wanted to say before we get into it?
I just want to thank Kian again for coming on and sharing the wealth of knowledge, as well as the Niska Dzamix Society for giving us permission to talk about and share these experiences as well. It comes through their approval, of course. And so without further ado, here's the clip.
By the Indigenous Collective at...
Oh, my God.
All right, we're having some technical difficulties here. One second.
Happy New Year.
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 Happy New Year to you.
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 May your days be bright.
Good morning and welcome to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting to you from the unceded ancestral territories of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam peoples. Today's segment is from a pre-recorded interview conducted on Sunday, January 29th. My name is Mario and I identify as Niska for my mother and European for my father's side. I am currently a third-year student in the First Nations Indigenous Studies program. Today I am joined by guest Kian Tate to talk about the history of Hobie for the upcoming celebration of Niska New Year's 2017. So first off, Kian, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, thank you, Mario. My Niska name is Walax, and I come from the house of Echdiwilugara from the Gidwilduktsx clan of the Raven tribe. And my families have roots in the communities of Lachaldzap and Gilakdamix in the Naas Valley. I'm very happy to be here today. And I'm also the leader of the Kligibaigum Kinisret dance group. And I also teach at Native Education College, cultural and language activist.
Very well-rounded and very committed in the community. I'm also part of Kian's dance group in the Kwikopayak. Part of our mandate at Unceded Airways is to create space for the representation of Indigenous voices in media. In our segment today, we would like to go over the history of Hobie as a tradition developed in the Naas Valley, and how it has since migrated to Vancouver and is hosted by the Niska Dzamix community. To begin, Kian, could you tell us about the origins of Hobie? Where does it come from?
Hobie is an ancient celebration that was mainly focused within the homes, individual homes. There really isn't any recorded exact dates of when the celebration started. Originally, it's a time when the Niska would watch the celestial beings, specifically the moon and some of the stars that surround the moon. And there's an ancient way of celebrating, which is mostly surrounded around gathering, emptying out your store boxes of foods and celebrating that way. And then today's celebrations are contemporary celebrating where there's large community gathering with cultural dancing and
so on. And so did Hobye originate in a specific site or village that can be connected to the astrology?
Yes, at the Upper Nass, between the communities of Gidwinksilk and Gidlat Amiks, there is a spot where what we call in our language Guchloxit. They are the Nisra version of astronomers and astrologers. So they would watch the moon and the stars and the sun, and they would use the positioning of any of those celestial beings to predict different happenings throughout the year. And so this particular season is called, there's a transition between the Buchlachs moon and the Hobye moon. So in our calendar, it's a lunar-based calendar, and so we have 13 months. Mm-hmm. And Buchlachs is one of the last months of the year, and then Hobye is the first month of the year.
Could you tell us a little bit more about these words? What is Buchlachs, and what does it translate out to?
Buchlachs is the name of the last moon of the year, and it literally translates pine needles blowing around. Lachs means pine needles, and then Buch is blowing around, so from the wind. That time of year is very, very cold in the Nass, and the north wind comes down the valley. And so it's so cold that the pine needles, they freeze and they fall off the trees, and then the really strong north wind that comes through blows the pine needles around. Mm-hmm. So it also marks the end of the winter for our people. And so that the transition between Buchlachs and Hobye is also the time when we start to begin to prepare ourselves to harvest the first harvest of the year, which is the Ulikans.
Are those specific practices and celebrations still happening in the Nass Valley, as well as the harvesting of the Ulikans?
Yes. Quite a few families, we watch the moon. For example, right now, we just had the new moon. So that's the beginning of the Hobye moon. And so just a few days after that is when the actual crescent moon, which we look for, that's what we watch for. So it's going to probably show itself probably around Tuesday or Wednesday this year, this coming Tuesday and Wednesday. So usually I've heard of quite a few families still celebrating, preparing special dinner that night, and just having a private celebration and basically on their own in their own homes. But also the communities in the Nass Valley, they still celebrate as a community. So they're usually their Hobye celebration happens at the very end of February, when a lot of the families are winding down from the busyness of the All-Native Basketball Tournament.
Right. And so just to clarify a little bit further, Hobye was traditionally celebrated individually by homes or houses in the community, whereas now in the Nass Valley it's celebrated amongst the entire Niska community together in one specific place?
Yes, that's correct. So with the contemporary celebrating of Hobye, what our relatives in the north do is that every year they rotate the host community. So this year it's being hosted in the community of Gidwinksilk. And so part of their celebration, at the very end of their celebration, after they've sung Hobye, they take the moon down, and that's hung in the middle of the community center. They take it down, and the host community then passes it on to the next host community. So that's all part of the celebration. Kind of, I guess, mimicking the Olympic torch, the Olympic flame being passed on to the next community that's hosting it. That's what I've likened it to. And it's really exhilarating to witness that the moon being passed on to the next community, and the pride that the current host community shows when they're passing on the moon to the next one.
That's awesome. That's something I have yet to witness, but I really look forward to in the future for getting a chance to participate and witness it.
Welcome to CITR 101.9 FM. You're listening to Unceded Airwaves. I am Mario, and if you're just joining us now, I'm joined by guest Kian Tay talking about Hobie Niska New Year's 2017. We invite you to join us coming up on February 3rd and 4th, the Peony Forum. It's free admission, open to the public. And now back to Kian talking about Hobie.
Now, I'd like to move on to connecting the history of Hobie, where it originated, how it's being celebrated today in the Naas Valley, and connect that to how it's since migrated to Vancouver. I wanted to note that Hobie is celebrated not only in the Naas Valley, but as well in Vancouver with the Niska Dzamiks. One of the reasons for this is that up to 50% of Niska live outside of the Naas Valley. For myself, I moved from home to pursue secondary education. For others, it's a means of work opportunity or quite simply the weather. In talking about Hobie and how it's migrated to Vancouver, perhaps you can just kind of touch off with what your role is with Hobie 2017.
This year, as the leader of the dance group, I've made it to all of the Hobie committee meetings, which are open to the Niska community here in Vancouver. And basically the host organization, Niska Dzamiks Vancouver Society, they put it out to the community to seek volunteers to help in organizing the celebrations. And so they have various tasks that need to be led. And so I've taken on the role of volunteering for dance group organizing. So basically organizing all of the dance groups that have been invited to celebrate with us at Hobie, as well as MC organizing and stage manager. So all three of those, they pretty much intertwine the different roles with each other. We've been pretty busy contacting. We're very fortunate to have invited, and we're having 8 dance groups participate with us at Hobie, including our local Niska dance group.
Who are some of the dance groups that will be participating this year? Do you know?
We have one dance group that has been coming out, I think, for the last 5 or 6 years. They're called Ishwat Dancers. They're from the Litwat Nation from Mount Currie, BC. And we also have the local Tsimshian dance group called Lachin Dancers. And we also have the Naak Dancers. It's their first year participating with us at Hobie. They're a Tlingit dance group based in Seattle, Washington.
That's exciting.
Yes, we're very much looking forward to their cultural sharing this year.
Yeah.
And we also have 4 dance groups that are traveling down from the north, from the Naas River and also Skeena River. So we have 2 Giksan dance groups, one called Da'otsip Kantlach Anzok. They're based out of Gidnyau and Gidwangak. And we also have the Gidamis dancers based out of Gitsugukla. And we're so excited to have the Gidmachmakai Prince Rupert dancers and also a group from the Gilacht Amix ceremonial dancers coming down to celebrate with us.
Yeah, it's always so amazing to see the dedication that everybody has in preparing for the celebration and coming down from such a far away distance. One of the other things that's happening as well is that the host community of Niska Dzamiks will be honoring guests from those dance groups that have traveled with a dinner the day before. Are you involved in that at all?
Yes, so I'm working with some of our other elders, our Simgigyat, that are residing in Vancouver to organize the MCs for that gathering. So basically it's a welcome dinner that the Niska Dzamiks is putting on for the dancers that are participating at Hobie. A chance, an informal chance for them to get together and get to know each other and share songs with each other, socialize, because quite a few times throughout Hobie, because of the tight schedule, a lot of times some dance groups can only go dance and then they're busy right after that or for whatever reason. They don't get to visit as much, so it's just a really good chance for them to visit with each other.
Yeah, real good.
So I think one of the unique things about Hobie is that it brings together multiple Indigenous communities for the chance to celebrate together, which is a rare opportunity. Now, I often have non-Indigenous members of the community ask me where they can participate and engage respectfully with Indigenous communities. Just to clarify, is Hobie open to the public, and who can participate?
For Hobie, for Friday, February 3rd, and Saturday, February 6th, or 4th, sorry, the entire community is welcome. The public is welcome. It's open to the public to come and enjoy all of the cultural sharing. It's going to happen from 10 a.m. until 10 p.m. both days.
And that's free as well, right?
Yes, it's all free.
Awesome.
We're very fortunate to have cultural sharing happening throughout the day, as well as different vendors that are provided to check out.
Yes, it's always so great to see other dance groups and people coming out and enjoying good food. Now, just as a distinction, what are the differences or similarities between the Hobie celebrations in the Nass Valley as well as here in Vancouver?
Our community here in Vancouver, we always wish to host our event at the beginning of February, and so that it doesn't schedule at the same time as All Native Basketball Tournament, which happens, I think, the middle 2 weeks of February. And we also don't like to put it too close to the end of February, because that's when our relatives in the Nass Valley host their Hobie celebration. And so it's a chance for, if at all, the dance groups from up north wish to travel down to celebrate with us, then it's a really good chance for them, schedule-wise. The similarities with the two celebrations is that all of the cultural dancing that'll happen. So basically the same thing happens in the north as it does down here. Two full days of cultural dancing. We both have a grand entry. For here in Zamix, our grand entry is Friday at 5 p.m. During that time, we have approximately just over 600 dancers and drummers that'll be entering in the grand entrance.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah.
If anybody has the opportunity to come out to see that and witness, it'll really change your mind about what and who Indigenous people are. Do you have anything else to add into that?
Yeah, some of the differences with our celebration is that back home, they have really great access to our traditional foods, and the abilities for the community to contribute in that way by bringing out all of their richness from their freezers, from their pantries. So a lot of traditional foods that's provided because they are community-based and they're governed by Nisqat laws in the community. So they are able to provide that type of food free of charge. So that's one of the differences between our two celebrations. So here in Vancouver, we're pretty much governed by the local laws. So Vancouver Community Health, I think, and or Coastal Health. And so we have to make sure that we have proper permits in place. And so we have to strive to find local Indigenous caterers who are able to provide that. And this year we're very fortunate to we did find someone. So we are going to have fried bread at Hobie. So that's always one of the biggest questions that we have whenever anybody comes to our celebration is, where is the fried bread? Some couple of years we weren't able to provide that, but this year we're very fortunate to be able to have that service.
That's beautiful. It's something that I look forward to every year as well, whether it's official, like being served in the venue, or unofficial, being sold in the parking lot.
Yeah, rogue vendors in the parking lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's happened in a couple of years. And another one of the differences that we have as well is that our venue for our celebration is it's rented. So this year, as I think we've been at the P&E for, I think this will be our fifth or sixth year now. We're so fortunate to have such a huge venue. Just to elaborate on the history of celebrating Hobie in Vancouver. We started out, the Tsamix dancers used to host Hobie, and they started out at the Friendship Center. So basically it was just a one evening, the Nisqat community providing a potluck dinner, and then the Nisqat dance group would dance after that.
Yeah, and what year roughly?
I think that was probably around 95 or 96 when they first celebrated Hobie here in Vancouver.
Wow, and 20 years later, it's grown to 600 plus dancers.
Yeah.
Roughly how many people do you think attend over the 2 days?
Well, the capacity at the P&E Forum is about 5,000. So in the evenings, it gets to be that packed. So I'm pretty sure easily in one evening, about 5,000 people will have passed through the P&E Forum.
That's really astounding, and speaks to, you know, the resurgence of culture and community building here in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes we don't really hear urban Indigenous peoples in the discussion around Indigenous community building. So it's really great to have that opportunity to explore what that is through Hobie.
Yes. And so we're very fortunate to have that size of a venue for our celebration, but we're also limited by the time that is available to us in the P&E Forum. So if we go over any of our time, we do incur expenses. We do like to strive to stay within the agenda that we've set up. Finishing off our grand finale by about 10 p.m. And then we have cleanup after that. But back home in the Nass Valley, they're very fortunate that the community centers are owned and run by the community themselves. So I remember hearing of one of the celebrations in Gilacht Amex going until about 3 or 4 in the morning.
Wow, that's...
And like the cultural dance groups not having that much of a time limit on their cultural sharing and just being able to really showcase their community's mm-hmm. love for the culture is just amazing to hear.
Yeah, when I think of Vancouver, oftentimes, especially around celebration and the idea of no fun city, as far as youth events go, we think of things being shut down or by about like 10 or 11 o'clock and everyone's able to go home and sleep by 12. So getting to hear about celebrations that go on well into the night to like 4 p.m. is something else, especially highlighting the fact that's because the Nisqa community owns their own facility back home. Mm-hmm. Now, I just wanted to conclude with a final question asking, what are some of your aspirations heading into the new year?
For myself and my family, we're really focusing on speaking the language a lot more than our borrowed language. So really focusing on eliminating the use of English in our home. And we're getting better at that. So that's one of the main aspiration for the year. And we're working on that with the community as well, with our dance group. That's one of my biggest goals for the year, is to have a really nice big group of our dance group. Being able to speak our language at dance practice and mainly just using our language.
Myself, I'm also part of Kian's dance group, and having the opportunity to not only just go to dance practice, drum, and sing our traditional songs, but also taking the extra day in the week to learn the language. You teach in an immersion style, so in the past we've learned through reading and writing, but also for this time it's just fairly strictly through immersion and getting a chance just to speak through conversation. And that's been a really great opportunity for myself, which I'll be also carrying on as my aspiration going into the new year. Mm-hmm. A final note, so that people can get a chance to go out and see the event, it's Hobie is happening February 3rd and 4th at the P&E Forum, which is 2901 East Hastings Street. From what time was that again?
10 a.m. until 10 p.m.
Right. And once again, this is Mario with Unceded Airwaves at CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting to you from the unceded ancestral territories of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam peoples. Today's segment is from a pre-recorded interview conducted on Sunday, January 29th. I want to thank my guest, Kian Tate, for sharing a wealth of knowledge. Toxinin, thank you. Kapike.
Would you like to get updates on your smartphone in an emergency, even if a cell tower is down? It is possible if the FM chip is activated in your phone. Visit freeradioonmyphone.ca to see how you can get involved by contacting your carrier and signing our petition.
Ever had a hankering to ski the world-famous slopes of
Whistler?
Boy, do we have great news for you. Escape the city in one of Zipcar's many mountain-ready vehicles. Plus, get $30 back in free driving credit when you tweet a selfie on the slopes at Zipcar BC. Zipcar, wheels when you want them.
All right, you heard a segment from Mario Parent talking about the Nishkin New Year Hobie celebrations happening this Friday and Saturday.
That's right. Thank you guys so much for letting us come on, take up a bunch of time, and get a chance to really talk about who we are and what we're doing in the community. Once again, happening Friday, February 3rd and Saturday, February 4th at the Peony Forum Hobie, the Nishkin New Year's, happening from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. That's at the Peony Forum.
12 hours of dancing. It's going to be amazing. We won't have a lot of time for unceded events this week. We were actually running short now. So there, I just wanted to mention that we have a Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Awareness Week happening at SFU, and I'll post a link to that on our podcast. The Chilcotin Nation is co-hosting fundraisers. There's one tomorrow at the Wise Hall, as we mentioned, at 7 p.m. On Adnack Street in Vancouver. And then we also have Salmon Girl, which is a performance happening February 3rd. Tickets are $15, and that's at 7 p.m. And there's also a performance on February 5th. So I'll post all those links on our Facebook page. But we need to end off our show with the following Unceded Airwaves segment by Josh Kiyoki. This is supplementary material from his interview with James Hart, a Haida master carver and hereditary chief, who is carving a pole behind the Museum of Anthropology here on the Musqueam Territory at UBC. You can check out the rest of that interview on our website, where it's podcasted at citr.ca. And this portion of the interview focuses on the artistic process that has gone into James Hart's latest work, The Reconciliation Pole, which he was carving literally while Josh was speaking to him. So here it is. Thank you for tuning in with us with Unceded Airwaves, broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
You've been doing this a while either way.
Yeah, seriously, since 79. I know that dates me, but that's the truth of it all. I carved before that, actually, when I was young, you know, young. And learning slowly from my uncles and stuff, and making tools. And wasn't too many tools in my repertoire in those days, but I started working with Robert Davidson on our project up at home, and I think that was a five-month journey, and we finished. But I learned how to make tools from him, and really make tools. And that, once you learn how to make your own tools, that's your freedom, because you can make any tool you need, you know, and then any tool you want, sort of thing. So it's really a nice technique to know, to have under your belt. So I recommend that for everybody. Learn how to make your own tools. And it's a good thing to do for yourself, man or woman. You know what I mean? It's for everybody. And that applies to wood or metal. You know, you start engraving gold and silver and stuff like that. Start doing jewelry. So you learn how to make your own tools there too. So it's the same. It's just smaller. You just downsize, and the way they handle this would be solid sort of in metal instead of hollowed like that from wood. It's smaller but solid. It's just a stronger edge, right? Then you carve metal with it. So it's pretty cool how you can miniaturize to do great big tools for handling big totem poles and canoes and things like that. So
do you still make your own tools?
Yeah, well, I can. I don't hardly anymore. I have to. when I get back, we got to spend some time redoing some tools and fixing them up. But like, this is a two-year project, and it's funny, I just don't make the time to make tools. I buy. If I see something nice along the way, I'll buy it. That looks like it's going to work for me. I'm quite fussy now because I know what does work. I got drawers full of tools that I don't use, sort of thing, and because they look like they would work when I was younger, like, buy it and you hardly use it. Now it's a certain amount of tools and certain tools that you really do use, and you can get by with them. But it's also nice to have, because you carve smaller things, you know, bowls and staffs and all kinds of cool things, you know, like smaller things that are require smaller tools and different tools. So this, we go to this, you know. I might not go too much smaller than that, in a sense, for this size of pole, because I can get in there and clean this, you know, the bottom out, and it would be, rather than going sharp, I can use a tool like this. And I don't think I'd go to a smaller gouge, just because it's the volume and size, and it doesn't require that. So, anyway, making your own tools is a real must. So the idea of the pole come up, and the idea of titling it Reconciliation is perfect. That's exactly what I want to do, right? So, and so I started thinking about it and what it meant to me, and all this stuff. And because there's reconciliation going on across the country, so there's many forms of it, and different avenues or different approaches to it. And so I wanted to say what I knew about it, and I didn't want to start saying stuff I didn't really know about. And so I put it together, and we found this tree. It took us over a year to find this tree. It's red cedar. It's over 800 years old, and this is actually the fourth attempt at finding the proper size. The first one I thought I had right off the bat, because there was a what we call blowdown at home, and the wind blew down this big tree, and we were jumping around on there, walking down the tree, and it was big, huge, and I thought it was the right one. And we finally got the end cut off and the top cut off, and we hauled it to our work site. And then we're working on the canoe and the longboat and the eagle, and I'm looking at this tree, and with the bark on and that, yet sitting there waiting, right? And then I start realizing the top is too small. It's not big enough. I wanted more volume on the top side so I could say what I wanted to say properly with good presence, you know. And so I start saying, okay, it's too small. That means now I have to go and find another one. So we went into this other area where the loggers were going into an area, so we're wandering around in the forest ahead of them, but it was on the road allowance, just happened to be. So that tree looked really good, but it took like 3 or 4 months for those guys to get there and clear it, get the roads built, haul it out of there. And then I get it back down to where I'm working, and it was too small. The top was too small again, right? And it's like, ah. So we went and found another one up the inlet, and we dragged it down by water. And the guys come up, they put it on the beach, and they come up and they said, you better have a look at this. It doesn't look very good. I said, what? Yeah, it doesn't look very good. And I said, okay. I wandered down the beach there. And sure enough, it was scruffy looking and curved, and the top end was too small again. I was like, oh. It was under logs when I looked at it. It looked good laying there, but I guess parts were hidden from other logs sitting on it. And so I went off and we looked for this one, and it was over a year before we found this guy. And we finally found it. You know, I tell everybody I met a lot of big cedars out there, and I know them by name now. I hugged a lot of cedars. And literally that's what you do, you know, you look at these cedars and check them out. And so we found this one, and it was in an area where there were supposed to be three other monumental trees, and we went there because of that. They're mapping them now at home, all the big trees, and they put them down on maps and where they are and stuff. And all three of them were too small. They were just small, nice trees, but they're too small. 300 years from now, they'd be nice and big, you know. But right now, they're too small for what I wanted, that's for sure. But we're standing there, I was kind of disappointed that, oh, no. And then I'm looking across the road, and there's another, you know, it's all... They had logged off the area in the earlier days, but this is one of the sections they left. You know, they leave bunches of trees when they're logging. They don't cut. They'll cut a hell of a lot down, just clear cut, but then they'll leave a patch. And then they'll leave another patch, you know, and stuff like that. And so this one was across the road. No, another one was there across the road, and it looked perfect, man. It was beautiful. So we had to go down this deep gully and up the other side, and then it leveled off sort of, and we went to the tree. It was beautiful on the side we seen from the road. And then I looked at the other half, and it was gone. The whole other half was rotted off. It was amazing. It was big, real big, you know, make a good totem, maybe a smaller totem. Anyway, so I'm standing there kind of disappointed, and I'm looking down the along the road sort of down the trees, and there's another big guy in there behind another big tree, but this one was a little smaller than that one. So I said, I'm going to go check that one out. And that was this one. And so I circled it, you know, I went up to it, and it looks really good. I'm hollering to my son and my wife there. And look, this one looks really good. So we walked around, and you know, the ground's uneven and stuff. We're climbing around the tree, and it looks good. The backside was okay. I said, and so I went and reported in. I said, I think I got one. Impossible. I went back with another fella who's got the say on the stuff. Like, he has to work with the logging companies. When we want a log like this, they have to go and check in. And ended up being on private land, so I mean, meant they owned it. And, you know, I mean, on paper they own it. We own it. We own the whole Aberdeen Shaw. That's our lands, right? And the unceded territories of our country, but we're still fighting with all that stuff. But they were good. They donated the log to me, the tree, in the sense of...
Hello, and welcome to Synchronicity.